We're now tuned in to the Lineman Lounge, the world's thickest sports podcast, with your hosts, Mike and Evo.
Come on, Stan, bitches. This is the Lineman Lounge. I'm Mike, that's Evo, and it is a Friday night. We typically come to you guys on Saturday, but Evo's got some things he has to take care of tomorrow, so you guys can pregame with us tonight. Get ready for your weekend. Go out to the bars tonight and chill with a couple of dummy thick idiots. I also got a couple of drinks that I brought downstairs as well, or that I'm going to have to make. But we have a big night. We're continuing on with our draft prospects. We're going to cover running backs and tight ends this evening, along with some UFC and other things like that. But my man, Evo, let me bring you in. How was the week, man? I know you are very excited. You got the boys coming into town. But how you doing, man?
Doing good, man. Yeah, it was a long work week. We've been having a lot of issues at work that I'm probably not allowed to talk about because our planes are having issues, and it's not just our planes. It's everyone on this installation is having issues, and no one knows why. So, yeah. So that's been fun working through all that and all of, you know, assumptions that people make and things like that. So it's pretty cool. But it's nice. I'm basically getting all next week off because it's spring break, and my boys are coming out. Hannah's just landed in Chicago. I was texting while the intro was going. Good. Just landed in Chicago. She'll be in your neck of the woods here in the next several hours out there in Ohio and picking them up and flying back tomorrow. So then we got a week of fun planned, which doesn't have a ton of plans, and that's kind of a good part. You know, good to go do whatever we want to do for the week. For sure. And I am still working Monday, but I'm actually working just so that way I can take one, if not both of them, in to show them how military aircraft works. So, yeah, looking forward to the next week. And that's why not doing the show tomorrow morning, because I'm still busy tonight getting things prepped, planned, prepared. Got to go out and buy stuff. And then tomorrow morning, got to be heading back up to Tucson to pick them all up and bring them back to start off the week.
All right. Very nice. Well, I'm happy for you guys. And tell the boys that we said hello. Can't wait to, you know, see them again whenever we get that possibility. But brother, I know you got a lot of things to do. I'd like to get upstairs after a little bit as well. So let's just stop fucking around and let's start diving into the show. What do you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's one program note to put out there, and that is underneath the No Sleeves Network brand, we have another show, The Talk, and we just put out another episode yesterday, I believe. It's an awesome one. It is out on the Talk Facebook page. It is out on YouTube. One of our more fun shows, I think. Unfortunately, it ended up having to be heavily edited.
Heavily edited because, yeah. I got to tell you, when I was editing all that, I was not having a great time. Like, I feel like I did a pretty decent job. Thunderclaps when names were being dropped with no name in there. But it was a colossal pain in the ass.
Yeah.
I posted, we're going to probably have to find a way to do a Patreon or OnlyFans. At some point, that story, the whole story, has to come out. But I also don't want to risk anybody, especially our boy, Matt, who is on the other show with us, getting in any trouble.
And while it is somewhat of a military-focused show from our military backgrounds and everything, it is not a military-related story. So
It's a story everybody will enjoy.
Yeah, it is. It is one that when I heard it the first time, like I said, I was rolling. I thought it was great, and I immediately knew. I was like, I gotta get this on the show.
Yeah, it was good. Matt did a great job telling it, but I did have to bleep out, I don't know, 20 different names of different things. We're going to talk about Russ a little bit, I think, today, because there's a lot of movement going on with quarterbacks. One of the only quarterbacks that can speak to people right now is Russ. But do you want to dive into some of the speculation, the things that we've heard this week before we start diving into prospects, or do you want to go right into prospects, man?
Yeah, we can go into the speculation stuff. It's going to kind of be tough to track because, look, it's another one of the
things happening.
It is quite literally March Madness, and the type of March Madness that I prefer, the non-basketball related stuff, because, look, legal tampering begins Monday, I believe, at noon Eastern time. We are in the illegal tampering period where things are not allowed to be talked about, but they sure as fuck are.
And that 100%.
Combine last week. And so that's why you're seeing reports about Kirk Cousins going, taking his kids to preschools in Atlanta and shopping for houses there. People seeing him get off his private jets in Atlanta, things like that. And why would he be doing that if he didn't already kind of have stuff probably in set or in place, worked out, things like that? And then you do have your completely legal talking, I guess. I don't know. It's not tampering because Russ Wilson has been informed.
Been given permission.
He is going to be released as of the new league year, Wednesday the 13th here. And because he is still a player under contract, teams are allowed to say, hey, you're allowed to go seek a trade, or you're allowed to go speak with other teams if you want to go play with them type thing. The Broncos have already said, we are releasing you and you are free to go speak to other teams. So he spoke with the Giants earlier, which you informed me of. I thought he was just seen at the airport there, but now he's on his way to Pittsburgh to talk with Steelers as well. He's also, and this is, I guess, a little bit more speculative, but he's essentially said that he will play for his next team under a vet minimum contract because he's already,
banking
a lot of money. So
39 mil, no matter what he's getting next year. So it doesn't matter. He can take the minimum amount of payment and he can maybe go help a team make the playoffs, maybe even compete. Because Russ, this last year, now, granted, this is not Russell Wilson of old. This is not Super Bowl Russ by any means. Russ has not cooked in a while, but Russ was at least league average this last year.
Yeah.
And it was thrown under the bus by his coach and the organization. Russ can still play a little bit.
You saw that, 2 years ago with Nathaniel Hackett, it was an absolute train wreck. And that's where we were also making the determinations on Russ, like, his arm strength is not anywhere what it used to be and things like that. Mm-hmm. But you see good quarterbacks like Peyton Manning who loses arm strength and things like that as they get older, but they're still able to competently run an offense, be a coach on the field, do good things. But when you have such a dumpster fire with Nathaniel Hackett, we thought, hey, maybe this is just Russ just being done. And last year he showed us he can still play ball. He's still at least an average quarterback. And obviously a smart guy, a lot of history behind him. And when you're under a more competent offense, you can obviously be a lot better. But there is so much inner turmoil there with that team as well that it's not a situation where he is set up to thrive. The conversations about, like, you need to take a pay cut or else we're benching you next time you lose type thing, that's not a friendly work environment. And I'm sure that that isn't the only instance that Russ had to deal with an unfriendly work environment. I think he's smart enough to understand that, he can be a starter in this league, but he's not long for being a starter in the league, and which is one of the reasons why, hey, I'm going to take that minimum contract. I'm going to go somewhere that wants me and go somewhere that is going to allow me to be a starter and lead a team and things like that. And that's why
at the very minimum compete to be a starter, because he goes to the Giants. I mean, you give me a Russell Wilson versus a Danny Dimes in a competition, I'm taking Russell Wilson, and I probably don't even really need to see them play too much. And I'm doing the same thing with Kenny Pickett. Like, Kenny Pickett is not the answer if I'm a Steelers fan. Russell Wilson is definitely a better quarterback. Does it get you to a Super Bowl? Does it get you competing where you want to? No, but it's a really nice bridge to go find the next guy.
Yeah, I think that any of the, common teams that are in the market for a quarterback don't already seem to have something set, he's a good option for. My Vikings, the Steelers, the Giants, the Raiders, these are all teams that are going into next season with either bad quarterback situations or no quarterback as of right now. You could throw the Bucks in there, but I really think Baker's going back. Atlanta sounds like Kirk Cousins is going there. And then you're going to have another one of these teams that kind of comes off the board as far as having a need whenever Justin Fields ends up getting dealt. So
which he will. That's going to happen. I cannot see any scenario where Justin Fields does not get dealt.
Yeah, it'd be a,
who's going to have the resource. Who's going to want to do it though? Because apparently what the Bears are asking for is a fucking lot. There have been teams that have been interested, but they have not been able to get a deal done because they are asking for, I think, at least a first round pick. I like Justin Fields coming out. There are still things I like about Justin Fields. But I don't know if I could see myself giving up a first round pick at this point to get Justin Fields. And that's probably what the Bears are looking for in return.
And I think that that was the other kind of reports that was coming out of the combine, is that the Bears were floating around what they were looking for. And the Bears were surprised that no one was even interested in what they were talking about. So I think that they're going to be surprised with the market not being as high for him as they want. Worst case draft night, he'll get traded, I believe, because they're going to want that pick compensation this year. It'll probably be something much more akin to the Calvin Ridley trade, where you see something like a second this year. And then in the future pick is, you know, dependent on, does he resign? Do you do the fifth year option? You know, things like that. And that's the kind of good and bad with Justin Fields, is that you've seen a quarterback that has had an ascension. He's got some talent, obviously. He also only has 10 wins under his belt as a professional quarterback, which is not good. You know, he's had some injury stuff here and there. And the fifth year option can be looked as both a good thing and a bad thing with him, because you can get 2 years of team control by trading for him. However, that fifth year option, and I only just learned this actually this week, the NFL is trying to dissuade teams from using that fifth year option. And we're probably going to be seeing it happen a lot less going forward, because the fifth year option, I believe, for quarterbacks right now is somewhere in like the $22 million to $25 million range. So their contracts, you know, are you know, single millions up until that fifth year option. And the fifth year option contracts are just getting bigger and bigger. So while that is still a bargain for a starting quarterback in the NFL, it is high for a guy that you're going to move on from in a year, possibly. If you're not sure about keeping Justin Fields on the team. So that being said, it can be looked at as a good thing or a bad thing. I still think the value of a fifth year of team control is pretty damn good right now, especially for a quarterback, when starting quarterbacks now are going to be making upwards of $40 million or more per year. It's just, you know, who's going to bite on that? And if, you know, Pittsburgh, I think, is one of the best landing spots for him. But if they get Russ...
I agree, and I hate that.
Yeah.
Because it's Pittsburgh, obviously.
But if they get Russ, then, you know, that's kind of a done deal. You don't need to consider trading. And I don't think the Vikings are going to trade for him. I don't think that he matches our scheme well enough. Now, our previous GM was really into him and wanted to draft him. But Rick Spielman isn't a part of the Vikings anymore. This is a new regime. They're looking towards the future, not new retreads. The Raiders, that makes a lot of sense to me too.
I believe the Raiders have brought up the fact that they would welcome Russ into the locker room, which... I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't do that. I mean, Russ is your prototypical dude that you want in the locker room. Like, he's a great locker room guy, even though he's corny as fuck.
But I think that if you're going for more of a long-term option, you'd be willing to trade for a Justin Fields, is what I was saying, and that he fits that system, like Justin Fields fits the system. The problem is, as what Antonio Pierce has kind of said, like, hey, we want our own homegrown guys. We don't want to bring in outside guys or anything like that, which, you know, makes sense. But where they're picking, it's going to be difficult from, I believe, pick 13 to move up to get one of the top four guys in the draft, despite the connections being there between Pierce and Jaden Daniels from their time at ASU and things like that. I think that they would love to do that. I think it's just going to be cost prohibitive at some point for them to do that. So Justin Fields makes sense to them there. But if they are true about not wanting to bring in outside guys and want to develop their own, then that kind of takes them off the table. And now your market's just getting really limited for who's going to be bringing in Justin Fields. And that will end up driving his price down to an extent.
Seattle still an option for Justin Fields at this point?
I would say no, unless they move on from Geno. Geno's contract is absolutely tradable, but then who's going to take Geno?
Yeah. God, we're running out of spots for all of these guys to go. Guys that maybe are, that we consider starters, are not going to be anywhere near that capacity. Like, I still think Justin Fields could compete to be a starter, but will he get that opportunity right away? Because his market doesn't sound like it's very vibrant right now.
Yeah, I think one of the fun options that maybe is not as likely, but I could see it happening still, would be there's been a lot more hustle and bustle about the New England Patriots not taking a quarterback at three and taking someone like a Marvin Harrison. And you do a trade for a Justin Fields, and now you have your short-term option there while you're in a rebuild, a guy who's already acclimated to playing in cold weather, more of a running-based attack, which that team might have to base itself around is more of a running-based attack right now. And so that's something that you could, you know, look at as a cheap bridge sort of an option if you're in New England, which, you know, you're also then getting one of the more prolific wide receiver prospects in the last decade out there to help build as well. So, like, that's an option as well. That's something that I feel would be better. I like him. I like him best with Pittsburgh, second best with the Raiders, third probably out there in New England. But beyond that, you're kind of, you know, the market's not there for him as much. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
And I really can't see Pittsburgh giving up picks to go get a quarterback. Like, that's not in their MO. They draft their own guys. That's another team that drafts their own guys. So I really don't see, I'm for sure, like, Russ is going to Pittsburgh. I feel it in my fucking bones. There's no way Justin Fields goes there because that organization does not give up draft capital. They don't do anything crazy. They are very much like the Packers in that sense, where they just try to do their homegrown thing. Well, it makes sense.
That's what's going to make it, I think, interesting with Russ, is that he's come out and said he'll take that veteran minimum contract, which I think that, you know, to get a league average quarterback on a vet minimum, 100% worth it.
Yeah.
But is he ending up going to actually end up taking that league minimum? Because there's going to be a little bit of a competitive market for him, I think.
Like, somebody's going to offer him 2 years, and that's going to change everything.
Maybe. I mean, I would pay $5 million a year for Russ for 2 years, fully guaranteed. I don't care at that point. That's still pennies compared to what he's generally worth.
And that's still not cost prohibitive. If it doesn't work out, you cut Russ and you have $5 million dead cap. That's fucking nothing. Like,
and that's what I'm saying. Like, the Giants, you know, he probably beats out Danny Dimes right now. He definitely is the best quarterback for Pittsburgh. For my Vikings, who are probably going to be looking towards a rookie quarterback, who better to have on the team than a Russ Wilson? If you look at any of the other potential free agent quarterbacks that are realistic to sign other than Kirk Cousins, and even Kirk Cousins, I don't know that he's necessarily a great mentor. He's a good guy, but, like, he doesn't want to mentor a young quarterback. He wants to play. Who better on the market to mentor a young quarterback than a Russ Wilson? Some guy who keeps his nose clean. He is.
I got a name.
Okay.
Joe Flacco.
Okay. Joe Flacco isn't bad, right? But apparently he's in talks to return to Cleveland.
Apparently interest. There is a lot of mutual interest. That would be great. I'd love to have Joe Flacco back. He will not be the starter. Deshaun Watson is going to go in as a starter, but having a competent backup is something that we obviously know that we needed last year. So getting Joe back would be great.
Yeah. But I mean, so Russ, he keeps his nose clean. He's corny. You know, he's that type of guy that is going to teach another quarterback how to be a professional.
Yes.
Maybe too far leaning in some ways, as far as, like, you know, being corny potentially, but I think that's going to be personal character and stuff like that. Not going to, you know, rub off too much on any of them, but, you know, I'll say, if my Vikings were to get JJ McCarthy, I would love to have a Russ Wilson there to mentor him for a year.
Well, I fucking bet you would, because you definitely don't want to start JJ McCarthy right away.
Well, I don't. I personally don't feel that bad if JJ McCarthy starts.
I know. We are still off on that, you and I.
Sure, and that's probably me being a little bit too bullish and putting on blinders to certain things, because I understand that there is definitely question marks.
There's a very real possibility that JJ is going to Minnesota, so you have to be okay with it.
Yeah, and I truly feel that I am okay with it. We'll see how it looks a couple years from now if that ends up being the case. As with anything, we'll see. But so there's a bunch of those sorts of rumors and stuff floating around, and we're seeing a bunch more cuts, teams working on getting cap compliant, some restructures or resignings of players, things like that. Any big names that you've seen cut that you'd be interested in bringing to your team, or think that there's schematic fits elsewhere?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry, brother.
Any other players out there that have been cut now that you think could be schematic fits for your team or other locations? Bigger name guys like Simmons. Yeah,
fucking Christian Watkins can come here anytime. I don't care. Okay, fine. Well, that's a scheme fit. That works great.
I'm assuming you mean defensive tackle.
Yes. I'm sorry. Christian Wilkins. I said Watkins, didn't I?
Look, I just got to keep you in check here because Christian Wilkins is coming back to play with Daddy D-Flo.
I fuck up the Watkins like name all the time.
What's Watson Wilkins?
Dude, I fuck him up every single time. I still don't know the name of the goddamn receiver up in Green Bay.
Yeah, well, he doesn't matter. He's pretty bad.
It's Watkins. His name's Watkins up in Green Bay. Or is it Wilkins? Okay, there we go. See, the intricacies, I fuck him up.
But that's at the end of the day, Wilkins, Christian Wilkins from Miami is going to be coming out to Minnesota. It's going to be Miami North up there with D-Flo. Possibly Xavier Howard as well. Stop.
No, he's coming to Cleveland, and we're going to have an absolutely dominant fucking defense again. But
all right, well,
in terms of like
the Vikings take JJ McCarthy, sign Christian Wilkins, and draft Chop Robinson early in the second round, we'll see how you feel about that.
How do you feel about Chop Robinson now after watching him go through his fucking combine workout?
Well, we talked about it last week. It was fantastic. I love him.
He's so good.
I don't know that he's you know.
If you can re-sign Daniil and you can have Chop and Daniil and Chop can learn from him, man, that's a fucking match made in heaven.
I mean, I would love that. Unfortunately, I don't think Daniil's coming back. Like, the Vikings want to re-sign him and they're going to have a little bit more money to play around with if they don't bring Kirk back. But Daniil, look, he's about to be a 30-year-old defensive end. That still means that he probably has a couple of years, but 30 is roughly around defensive ends where they start to kind of fall off a little bit. He's never gotten a big contract before with the Vikings. And that's partially his fault and his agent's fault because they never really twisted the Vikings' arm for one. He's going to hit the market. He's one of the better defensive ends that's going to be available. And there's already a strong market for him. Jacksonville wanted to trade for him last year. Jacksonville's going to be in on him this year. You have Chicago and Detroit both interested in him this year as well. Like, I don't think that the Vikings, he's going to get to a point where he's going to be getting paid upwards of $25 million a year average value. And I think he's worth it, but that's going to be a tough pill to swallow, I think, for the Vikings, unless we start to backload a contract for him.
You're not going to be able to do that because I'm pretty sure you guys are going to be in on the Saquon Barkley market.
I would love that too.
That's a really good scheme fit. Saquon to Minnesota is a great scheme fit.
Saquon's market's going to be booming as well, though. Texans, Chargers, there's a lot of people he's a good receiver, he's a good runner, he's a good blocker. The only real question with him is he has some fumbles now and then. But when you're giving a guy the ball 25, 30
400 times a year, he's going to fucking fumble.
Yeah. So, look, I would love that as well. There's the Vikings right now are projected with Harrison Smith still on the roster, and I think that he's either going to retire or be cut, projected to have top five money next year in cap space as of right now. We can front load a lot of these contracts back load a lot of these contracts and make a bunch of these signings if we wanted to. And I would love to see that. Bring Daniil back, bring Christian Wilkins in, bring in Saquon. My offseason is set, other than the draft, obviously. Like, I'm happy with that. We need a bridge quarterback, but and maybe a Xavier Howard to play some corners and stuff like that. But look, this isn't Madden. I can't just turn the salary cap off and sign whoever the fuck I want. It's going to be competitive out there. And one of the things that could kind of make things more competitive is we already saw this drastic jump in the salary cap this year. If the NFL gets what it wants, which is an 18-game season, you can expect the increase in the salary cap to go up even more because the NFLPA is probably going to not only expect a 1/8 increase to that salary cap or 1/18 increase in salary cap because of an extra game, but you're also going to see potential further increases because the year overall is going to lengthen. They're going to probably have to add in a second bye week for teams at that point. They're going to have to remove a preseason game, add in a second bye week, and then add in extra salary to compensate for the extra weeks involved, plus the extra game that you're going to be playing.
I also think the roster might get a boost as well, because we saw some changes with the roster with COVID. If they add an 18th game, I would expect some adjustments with the roster as well. Maybe the active roster goes to a bigger number. Maybe you can carry more guys on practice squad, just because with that extra game, you got to worry about the risk of injury. So it would not be a surprise to me. At least I would think it would be in the interest of the league and the players to adjust the roster construction as well if you're going to add that 18th kid.
Yeah, and that those all factor into increased salary cap. So right now, those projections for teams next year, they're going to go a lot higher because I really think that this 18th game, the NFL, you know, when they moved to 17 games, they wanted the 18th game. And it's already been being talked about. I think that this is something that could very possibly happen by next year, not 2024 season, but 2025, which means that next offseason, this time next year, we'll be talking potentially about an 18th game, this increased salary, that sort of stuff. And you know what? I will say there is one awesome benefit to them adding this 18th game and how this is going to shuffle the season along a little bit. It'll put Super Bowl Sunday, the day before Monday, President's Day. You won't have to worry about work for most of America on President's Day.
Yeah.
And so it'll allow people to go out and have themselves a fucking awesome Super Bowl weekend and work that hangover off on Monday, not on the job, but from their bed.
I never went to work with a hangover or still drunk from the Super Bowl.
Of course. It's
highly irresponsible.
100%.
Anyways. Any other guys that you want to talk about before we start diving into some of these prospects? Because, I mean, there was a lot of fucking moves that happened over the last, week since we started, since we last spoke on here, I guess. Any other guys you want to talk about? I know Matt Abuke was a big get back for the Ravens, able to re-sign him.
Well, they franchised him. He hasn't actually signed anything yet, but...
They agreed to a $98 million deal. I believe today.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
So 4 years, 98 mil, I believe 75 of it's guaranteed. So huge money for Matt Abuke. You would imagine that I'm going to fuck his name up again. Christian Wilkins. There we go. It's going to be somewhere in that neighborhood. Maybe it'll not quite as much because Matt Abuke, I believe, is probably the top D tackle that was potentially available. And he's fucking 26. So we're talking in that range right there as well.
Yeah, the difference probably a couple million guys. Less. I mean, there's definitely some schematic differences. Christian Wilkins, this is him coming off that first contract, but he is 28, so he was a little bit of an older prospect. We did see a little bit of a dip in his production last year, but that also coincides with Brian Flores leaving. He was better under Brian Flores, hence why he's probably going to want to come play with B-Flow again. Mm-hmm. He was still... from the interior, he still had like 60 pressures last year. So it's not like he was doing bad. It was just a little dip in production. Whereas, like you said, Matt Abuke, 26 years old, uber productive, top five defensive lineman in the league. That number that you brought up for his contract, 4 years, $98 million, that's putting him just a little bit below $25 million per year, which is actually what the initial projection was for Christian Wilkins, was a three-year $25 million per year deal, which I would be comfortable with. And knowing that Christian Wilkins is probably going to get a little bit slighter contract than that, I mean, the only thing that's going to drive it is now that he is going to be the main interior defender on the open market, maybe he gets more. I would be surprised, but I still would
I think the average out annual value will be very close, if not the same. I think the years might be different. I think Christian will get a three-year deal, max, probably.
Yeah. And I was comfortable with Wilkins at $25 million a year. So... you know, we could see that happening, definitely. But yeah, other than that, I mean, look, I wish that we had, like, that the NFL had its own actual tracker to show us salary cap information and things like that, because we still have teams that aren't cap compliant. They have to be compliant by Wednesday. That's why you're seeing a lot of cuts and things like that. Derek Carr gets his contract restructured. Tyrann Mathieu gets extended, but his money is getting pushed off into the future and stuff like that he was owed. Currently, so there, you know, the Saints still salary cap hell. We don't know exactly where they're at in order to get compliant yet. And it's the same way with other teams out there. So I wish that we had some sort of an actual tracker like that. Over the Cap tries to do a really good job, but they're not 100% accurate. So it'll be interesting to see. You're still going to see other cuts and things like that happening here within the next couple of days.
All right, brother. Well, I got nothing else on the silly season as of right now. I mean, shit's about to ramp up like crazy. Next show, we're going to have plenty of free agent movement to talk about because legal tampering starts, Monday?
Correct. Monday, noon, Eastern time, which it is tough to keep track of all that stuff. I know a lot of people are going to be at work. Like I said, I'm going to be at work for a little bit in the morning. but I should be home by the time legal tampering is starting. I'm going to do my best to try to keep up with all of it, posting it on the social page. So if you follow an ESPN and Adam Schefter or something like that, you will probably be getting a lot of those updates. I follow all of them. We follow all of them. We are going to be trying to keep all of that shit posted as a one source option on the Lyman Lounge page, you know, sharing those headlines so that way you can keep trackers of that. There typically are free agent trackers and stuff like that online as well, which hopefully I'll be able to find post links to. So that way, if you want to go see, is my team talking to anyone? Do they have anything worked out with a player? Or is one of the guys that you want to get, if they are available still or talking to other teams, have something kind of set up already? Those trackers should hopefully help guide you a little better. So to tide you over until the show that we put up next week, hopefully that Lyman Lounge Facebook page will be a good resource for you. A nice one-stop shop.
Hell yeah. All right, man. Well, let's make the transition. Let's start diving into some of the prospects that we got available in this upcoming draft. We're talking tight ends and running backs. If it's good with you, brother, let's start with tight ends, because the number one prospect, I got a write-up, and I believe you have a write-up on him as well, Brock Bowers. Let's start there, man. This one's pretty simple.
Yeah. Brock Bowers is easily going to be the top tight end taken. We've talked about this in previous shows for myself. I don't know how I can view him completely as a tight end. He is an amalgamation like of multiple positions. He is 6'4", 240, and you don't know what to exactly call him. So he gets lined up as a tight end kind of, but he is just kind of this weird multi-tool offensive player at 6'4", 240. That is pretty good tight end size. He is a fantastic receiver. He runs like a wide receiver. He plays like a wide receiver. He can block. He can play as an H-back role. He is kind of like what you almost see from a Deebo Samuels, but with a much bigger frame, which allows him to play all of these different positions. And it makes him super, super, super intriguing for a lot of teams. And it's why, by most metrics on big boards, he's rated in the top 10 for sure. A lot of them top 5, top 6. And he could go anywhere from realistically pick 5 to maybe pick 18 in the first round, just because the tight end moniker is a bit of a devaluing thing for players. But I fully expect him to probably go in that top 10, if not top 10, I would think 15 would be like the maximum range that you'd see him drop. The guy is a fantastic route runner, fantastic blocker, fantastic receiver. He does everything really damn good. Like, is he smaller for your dream tight end size? Maybe 6'5", 6'6", and 250, 260 is probably what you're looking for like a dream tight end size. But you won't ever find a guy that is going to have the same measurables and the same capabilities that he does at that size. Like a Tony Gonzalez, fantastic fucking tight end, but he's one of those bigger tight ends. He won't be able to have the sort of receiving production that you'll see from a Brock Bowers out there. But he's not as slight and lean a frame where he's as small as a Kyle Pitts out there in Atlanta, where Pitts isn't going to be expected to do any sort of blocking. He has the requisite size in order to be a decent blocker in the NFL. Like, to me, he's got all pro potential. Like, we're going to see him be a fantastic player in this league. I think that one of those good fits for him is out there at pick number 5 to the San Diego Chargers. But then after that, you could see him, you know, if the Jets are able to shore up some of their offensive line issues, he would be a great pairing for the Jets, as because they need a receiving option, but they also need blocking help. So, you know, if someone's going to be able to make use of him, I'm sure Aaron Rodgers can find a way to do that for the 3 plays that he plays this year. So Brock Bowers with a dot, number one tight end in this draft. And then after that, everything just kind of drops off. There's good players, but you're not going to see, in my opinion, anyone that I'm jumping up and down for until at least round 3.
3, yeah. I feel the same way about Brock Bowers, man. He's awesome. But, like, he is, in my opinion, he is going to be typecast. He's got to be a move tight end. I don't like him in line. He is a big-ass wide receiver. He looks like a big-ass wide receiver.
Yeah.
And I've seen some comps that's like, oh, this guy looks like George Kittle. He's like George Kittle. He's not. And I can't ever comp a tight end to George Kittle unless they can fucking block. And Brock Bowers, while not a bad blocker, is not a good blocker. Like, he is, he gets in the way. That's what his job is at Georgia, and that's what he did, because he wasn't asked to be really an inline guy and go and do drive blocks and all this other shit. He's a guy you move around, and he's an absolute fucking weapon. Like, doesn't matter where you put him. He kind of looks like, when he's running his routes, now he's not as big, probably not quite as athletic, but it reminds me way more of a Travis Kelce type, where he is really good offensive weapon, not somebody I want in line on, you know, on blocking. So that's where I am on that. And we saw a couple of tight ends last year who were fucking great. Like, Sam Laporta was obviously amazing for a rookie tight end. Dalton Kincaid had a really good year. Brock Bowers is a dude that can come in and produce right away. Like, that's not something that you typically see with a rookie tight end. It's a very, very tough transition. But for me, I don't want him in line. I want to use him like I use a Travis Kelce. I want to use him as a weapon. I want him on the move. Give him free releases and let him just cook these fucking linebackers and safeties.
Yeah, and so I'll say this. When I bring up that he's a good blocker, I'm talking, like, for his size and stuff like that. Do I want him in line as a blocker? Not necessarily. But if I'm putting him out there on the field three downs, I'm not going to feel bad if he's out there blocking.
No, but no, listen, I'm not saying he's a bad blocker, but he's not George Kittle. I've seen so many comps of, like, oh, this guy's like George Kittle. This guy's like George Kittle. Until I see one of these tight ends bury a fucking future Hall of Fame D end like George Kittle did to Von Miller, I'm not comping anybody to fucking George Kittle and his ability. Maybe his offensive pass catching ability is similar to what George Kittle could do. Sure. But George Kittle has a much more well-rounded game as a tight end. And I'm not sure we're going to find that in this draft, period.
Yeah. Honestly, I think Bowers ends up being a better receiving option than Kittle. And that's where the trade-off kind of ends up happening.
He's more of a Kelce type in my mind than a Kittle type.
Sure.
Even though comping somebody to Travis Kelce, who might be the greatest tight end of all time, is a fucking stretch.
Yeah, it's you know, player comps are never going to be perfect one for ones.
Right.
And so you'll see a little bit of this guy, a little bit of that guy there. And so, look, Brock Bowers is probably going to be another one of those, in my opinion, has the potential to be another one of those great tight ends when we talk about, you know, a Mark Andrews, a George Kittle, a Travis Kelce. And you know, I would say Hockenson, Laporta, those guys are starting to work themselves into that conversation of Njoku, some of those great tight ends in the league right now. And I think that Brock Bowers is going to be, his name is going to be tossed amongst those as one of the better tight ends in the league. So
yeah, and it's not like Brock can't get better at blocking. Like, David Njoku, when he came into the league, was a fucking height, weight, speed guy, was super tall, super fast, and could jump out of a fucking building and was not a great blocker, but really grew into becoming a blocker. So that is not something that you can't learn. And Brock Bowers has the ability, has the physical makeup to become a good blocker. He's just not there yet.
Yeah. And that's, I think he'll be able to be at least that receiving type of tight end year one, where he's talked about, you know, in those circles. The only real question mark, I guess, with him is the injury. Hurt his leg this year. We'll see how he comes back from that. Everything seems to be pointing in the right direction that he should be good to go, you know, in full for this year. I think even at his pro day, he's going to be like running and things like that possibly. So not too much to worry from there.
All right. Let's move on to the next guy. And I think this is somebody that we both have on our list. Theo Johnson. So this is, man, I had him as a day three guy, but put on a really good combine performance, could maybe sneak his way up into late day two, maybe round four. That's the best I can see him. But look, he ran fucking great, jumps well. He needs to improve his blocking ability, but this is another guy who is a height, weight, speed guy, like fucking straight line, dead speed. And like, he's got that stuff in spades, but also didn't necessarily get a ton of opportunities at Penn State to show that he's a big time weapon. Like, they didn't really use him in that fashion. They're constantly running spread, different receivers getting the ball, running out of, like, he just didn't have a ton of opportunities. But when you look at him, he has tons of physical makeup that's like makes him a very attractive late day two, day three guy that you could grow into becoming a solid contributor on your team.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way he's not getting picked on day two with how he was selected. I wouldn't go as far as saying round two, but definitely a round three type of guy where he wasn't viewed as that until the combine. And realistically, the combine shouldn't be making guys have that big of a jump. But look, he's 6'6", just shy of 260, ran a 4.57 at that size, which is fantastic. And like you kind of brought up in college, like, didn't have as much opportunity to show off his receiving talent. He didn't have as good of a year this year as a receiver. But at the end of the day, like, he's got extremely reliable hands, willingness to go out there and make catches in traffic and things like that. No problem. You're talking about fantastic size and strength profile. He's not going to get taken down by arm tackles. It's just he came from a spread offense and had a limited route tree, so he'll have to develop in that aspect. And he's definitely a work in progress as a blocker. Like, he's going to play too high and get overpowered. But
doesn't bring his hips when he fucking blocks, man, at all. And it pisses me off.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I noticed when I was like,
these are things that can be worked through though. Like, it's with it, that size, speed, and all of the measurables that he has. It's different if you have a guy that is smaller, slighter frame and stuff like that, that they're just probably not going to hold up in the long term in the blocking game. He's got the physical makeup for it. He just has to be coached into it, in my opinion. So he's a guy that I definitely like, day two. I don't think that he's going to not go day two. Someone could get froggy and take him in the second round. I still view him as a third round guy because I don't know that I see anybody in this draft as a second round tight end in general. Third round is really where you're starting to look at guys that, you know, depending on how a team views them, you could see a Jatavion Sanders from Texas or a guy that you're going to talk about here probably next, and Cade Stover being, a third round guy. It's just kind of what their flavor of the day is going to be.
Well, see, and Theo, I had as a day three guy, like round five. Mm-hmm. Now with his combine performance, I got so hard when you see the height, weight, and speed, you're like, man, the raw makeup is there. And let's not get it twisted. NFL head coaches, fucking position coach, NFL coaches in general are all A-type personalities that say, I can make this kid way fucking better. And somebody's going to take him on day two, round three, round four, somewhere in there. If he flies up to round two, somebody's way over drafting, in my opinion. But like, he has the physical traits you want. Not everybody has those physical traits. You can't coach those fucking physical traits. So for me, day three, probably moved into day two with the combine, but somebody will get an interesting little prospect. He will instantly be a red zone threat, though, a red zone threat.
That's the biggest plus from his game this year. He had 7 touchdowns, which is a big jump from the previous year where he had 4 touchdowns, and the year before that only had 1 touchdown. And we're talking about, minimal jumps if you're just looking at the number, but when you're talking about the lack of receiving targets and stuff like that he was getting, it was just about the same amount of targets, year in, year out, but you're seeing production increases in an offense that isn't super pass heavy there. So definitely a red zone target. I like him as, a guy who will probably end up being a starter in this league. And at least a middle of the tier or middle of the pack type tight end with potential to be a little bit, especially if he develops as a blocker.
Yep. All right. I got nothing else on Theo.
Yep.
You got anything?
Nope. Let's move on to your guy, Cade Stover.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude. I love Cade. And I actually think Cade could be a massive steal for a team. I got him probably third round. I don't know if you can get him any higher than that. Could fall maybe a little bit, but Cade is a fucking football player. Like, that's what the man plays football. He was recruited to play linebacker at Ohio State. Then he transitioned to edge, and he's been playing tight end full time now just for the last 2 years. So the fact that he's got himself into this position as a day two, third round tight end with only 2 years of experience playing the position shows that he has got a fuckload of potential. Like, he could be amazing for a team. But when you look at him, when you look at the numbers, that like he doesn't do anything special. He's not necessarily a crisp route runner, but he's only been playing the position for 2 years. He doesn't have long speed, but he's a tight end, so I'm okay with that. Like, he's not a fantastic blocker, but has shown ability to block a little bit, but he's never really had to do that in his fucking career. Like, this is a dude that if you give him time, if you do not expect him to come in and be competing for a shitload of reps, and you get him in an NFL locker room for a year and let him learn how to play this position more and more, Cade Stover could be really fucking good, dude. I think that he has the potential to be like a steal later in the draft.
Yeah, that's. I think that he's probably one of those round three guys again as well. And out of the ones that we're talking about, he has probably got the highest floor of all of them. Like, he will be a solid NFL tight end, in my opinion. But the potential is there for more, obviously. What's impressive about him is, that, again, like you kind of brought up, he doesn't have, like, great straight line speed necessarily. Like, he's got a good route tree, but he's not going to create separation because of that speed. He does have good technique with blocking. He's just not a high-end blocker as of right now and could definitely develop into that. The impressive part for me with him is his hands are pretty damn fucking fantastic. He's only had two drops in over 100 targets over the past 2 years, which
pretty
damn good for any sort of a receiving option, wide receiver or tight end otherwise. So again, like, nothing that he does blows the doors off or anything like that. But again, super high floor with this guy. And he's a very, very well-rounded tight end, which is absolutely something that you're looking for in round three.
Yeah, 100%, man. I don't got too much else on him, man. I mean, I want him to be a better blocker. Like, he doesn't do anything great, but God damn it, he does everything well enough that you want him to be on the football field. Mm-hmm. So that's all I got on K, but I like him.
Sure. All right, who you want to go over next for tight ends?
So my last guy I got here, I got a decent little write-up on, is Dallin Holker. I know you have him as well. Do you want to cover him, or you had a guy that I did not have on my list, right?
Yeah, Dallin Holker for me, I like him. I still like him as more like a fifth round guy, a little bit later.
Yeah, very late. The reason I have the write-up is the clip from the combine.
Sure. Yeah. For those of you who don't know about Holker at the combine, when running the catching
the gauntlet drill or whatever, right?
The gauntlet. He got confused in it. With the last catches, ended up catching a ball and holding on to it, thinking that's the one that you hold on to and run, looks the other way and another ball is coming to him. So rather than drop the ball and catch, he just does a one-hand catch and snags the other one and runs with two balls for the rest of the way.
Yeah,
so,
fuck it, dude.
Yeah, which, you know, it isn't going to hurt. Even though it was a mental error, he made the best of it, which is, you know, what you hope for when a guy makes a mental error, because none of these guys are going to be perfect. I think he's a good depth piece. He's versatile. He's
never anything more than a backup tight end in my position. In my opinion, he's a number two guy.
I think he can be a second tight end that would round out a two tight end schemed offense.
Okay, I can do that.
Because he's not a guy that I want to be on the bench. Like, I would like to see him on the field every now and then. He's a good role player piece, natural mover. He's not like an elite athlete or anything by any means, but a good receiving type of tight end. I'm not huge or high on him as being a blocker at all, but
neither.
Low drop rate, good receiving tight end. And obviously, you know, the little combine boost there, you know, to me.
Well, and did not run the 40 well at all. Does not have long speed by any means. Ran a really fucking good three cone though. And if you guys have watched the show at all, you know that I have a fucking hard on for the three cone drill and how that translates to your ability to separate and win some routes, which is what you would want a Dallin Holker to do. Needs to improve as the blocker, but I think that like that could maybe get him to be a quality number two tight end with his ability to separate if he refines his route running a little bit.
Sure. All right. I did have one other guy, and I actually you know, especially in PFF mock draft simulator and stuff like that, like he's kind of one of my stash away guys. He's been rising in Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State. I like him a lot. I think that he's my kind of mid-round steal that'll end up being a long-term starter. He reminds me a lot of Trey McBride. Like, the guy is a multi-tool as well, kind of at the tight end, not anywhere near as much as a Brock Bowers, but he's well-rounded, jack of all trades. You can line him up in the backfield as an H-back, or out tight end or wide. He's a good receiving option. He's nothing special as far as a blocker. Like, I think that he's a better blocker than Holker. He's better than what we saw at Cade Stover, but Stover wasn't asked as much to do that. And since it's been a tight end, you know, his whole career for this. So, solid receiving option though. I think that he has a lot of similarities to a Trey McBride out there in Arizona who really blew up this year. You know, enough for them to get rid of Zach Ertz, who's now a Washington Commander. Ben Sinnott, I think fourth round is now his floor. You were seeing him, fourth, fifth, sometimes even leaking into the sixth. But, like, he had a good combine, not a great combine. Looked good as a receiving option there, though. A guy that I'm a big fan of.
All right. I'm going to have to go check him out. I have not done a lot on Sinnott, so I'm not going to sit here and try to fucking fake it like I have.
Sure. All righty. Any other tight ends that you want to bring up?
Not for me, brother.
Okay. Yeah, in general, it's kind of a weaker tight end class. You have I don't want to call them Jags because, like, we brought up these guys third, fourth round and stuff like that that we think can be competent role players in offenses, but there's only one true standout here, and that's Brock Bowers.
Yes.
And that's why he's being talked about as a top 10 pick.
Well, and when you do these comps, everybody's like, oh, this guy could be this, this guy could be that. All of these motherfuckers can't start. All these motherfuckers can't even make the team. So, like, it's tough to sit here and be like, I like his skills, but does that skill play enough in the NFL? Somebody like Dallin Holker, I would love to see this kid make a roster and stick and be really good. Is that a dude that I worry about maybe not sticking around? Yeah, because the athleticism did not show up at the combine, but he's got a great three cone. So it's going to be what teams value. But you can't, we're going to have to talk about some dudes that are going in the sixth, seventh fucking round who maybe can stick because not all these fucking dudes are making it.
Yeah.
The draft is a crapshoot.
Our next position group is one of those where we don't have a top end talent. And part of it is because the running back position is devalued a lot in the NFL. And it's a common trope. You can find your starting running back second round and later. And second round is probably where these running backs start. I don't think there's any one of them that has any way of, you know, creeping into the first round. And second round, even then, it's kind of shaky. And it's if a team kind of gets a hard on for one of these guys that they would go in the second. To me, these guys are all like third round guys or later. And that's not to say that they won't become, consistent starters in the NFL for some of them. I think that there's several guys out here and that we're going to talk about that could end up being starters, especially in a multi running back backfield. But there's no Saquon Barkley in this group. There's no Bijan Robinson in this group. There's no Jahmyr Gibbs in this group. None of these guys are like the do everything, be everything back, at least from an evaluation prospect right now. I'm sure that we're going to get one or two guys out of this that end up being good.
Somebody always pops.
Right.
And it might be a guy that doesn't even get fucking drafted. That's the spot. The running back is the spot where you cannot get drafted and be an immediate impact on a team. No problem. I actually have one of those guys, but I want to talk about him first. I want to talk about Jonathan Brooks. So this is a guy that I thought could be like a top premier, like fucking running back talent, but then he goes down with the ACL. There's a possibility that he's going to be 100% good to go. And if that's the case, he has a chance to be really goddamn good because super low mileage on him, very much like a Jahmyr Gibbs last year, did not have a ton of carries. So Jonathan Brooks is not, you're not going to worry about him wearing down too quick. Fucking explosive runner through the hole, super fucking fat, like agile at the second level. He wins with his elusiveness, but he's not a small dude. He's like 6 foot, 210.
07.
Oh, 207. So, like, he could be really special, but you gotta make sure he can bounce back from the ACL. Now, that happened in November. How excited are teams to jump on a running back with a torn ACL. It's not that long ago. A lot of these guys are not going to do anything. Some of these guys are not going to get drafted, might catch on later. But the free agent market for running backs is also rife with talent right now because, like, nobody wants to pay them. So these rookies coming in are going to have a really hard time finding a landing spot, especially being drafted. So Jonathan Brooks, I thought, had a chance to be the number one guy. I don't know if that's going to happen anymore with the injury, but a guy that I like, super explosive, could be a three down back, but I need to see him come back and actually play before I'm ready to make that declaration. Do you got anything on Jonathan Brooks?
Yeah, Jonathan Brooks, I see shades of Aaron Jones from him. I like a lot of his game. I think that with a dot, he probably would have been the first running back off the board this year had it not been for the injury. And despite that, he still might be the first running back off the board. It's just they're devalued. That's why I'm talking third round and stuff like that. Like, I don't know that he's a first round pick without the ACL injury. I still think he's a second rounder, again, because he is not one of those top end, top tier guys. I still think that he's a second rounder without the ACL. This is the one guy that I could kind of still see sneak there into the second round because he does have that potential. He showed a lot in college, good receiver, good runner, good blocker, and has the requisite size, 6 foot, 207. But because of the injury, he's probably a third round guy, and he's going to now be in the mix with a couple other dudes that'll be looked at in the same echelon of where they should be drafted, not purely from a talent perspective, because pure talent, he's probably just a slight edge above the rest of this group. It's just the injury is going to drop him a little bit, and that's where you can see him be going around that third round.
Okay, cool. I think we're thinking the same thing there. Who do you got for your running backs? Who do you like?
So again, it's kind of tough for me because when you're talking about third round guys or later, I see a lot of value in them, especially if they're, you know, a part of a backfield with other running backs.
A lot of committee guys.
So a Jalen Wright out of Tennessee, I like. You're going to hear a lot of comparisons to like an Alvin Kamara because the height, weight, speed is very similar. And, oh, he played at the same school. And so it's tough to get out of that trope. But I do like him as definitely more of a receiving back and outside zone scheme. I do not like him between the tackles very much. But, you know, we've kind of heard that as being a possibility with Jahmyr Gibbs. And look at him. He did perfectly fine between the tackles as well. To maybe a little bit more of a leaner Kenneth Walker sort of feel to me. He's 5'10", and, you know, right around that.
Mert, shut the fuck up. Goddamn cat.
He's right around that 210 mark as well, but he just looks leaner than a 210 player would at 5'11". So I kind of like him as a little bit more of the receiving back, the third down back. I want to see a little bit more from him blocking. Blake Corum, you know, he was probably going to be one of those more high end running backs if he went last year, ended up deciding to stay another year.
Got a chip out of it. Yeah, can't really blame him.
He still, I feel like he's a thumper. He's a winner. He's a grinder, but he's not going to be like my every down back. I'm not sending him out there to catch a ball because he's only caught 16 last year. Then again, that team was a running team, not passing the ball very much at all. Solid runner. He's a winner, but he's got a lot of fucking miles. So how long is he going to last? You know, we're talking about, over 1,000 yards the past 2 years, 258 rushes this year, 248 the year before. And he almost had 1,000 yards on 144 rushes in 2021. The guy's got a lot of mileage on him. And as we know, running backs will be great. So you could definitely put him back there as part of a backfield and feel good about him for the next 3-4 years. And then he's probably going to fall off a fucking cliff. So that's going to devalue him to that third, maybe even fourth round. One of the guys I really like is Bucky Irving out of Oregon, former Minnesota Gopher as well. He's a guy that is 5'10", 195, looks way leaner than that. Good receiving back, though. Like, really solid receiving back. Showed to be a decent runner, but he, again, is not a full-time running back. You don't want him out there three downs. Mm-hmm. 55 receptions on 61 targets this year for almost 400 yards. He had 11 rushing touchdowns and 1,200 yards rushing the ball this year, but Oregon's offense, you know, kind of spread people out and gave him
open. I mean, yeah, you can fuck. It's hard to gauge what a running back from Oregon is going to do because the boxes are always light.
Yeah. And then a guy that I really like that I think is, he's going to be, I don't know where he's going to be taken, because this is a guy that I think could be talked about with a couple of those top guys being taken in the third round, or he could, you know, drop further down and be more of a fourth round, fifth round type of guy, and Trey Benson out of Florida State. The question mark for me is his injuries. He's had, you know, like some serious knee injuries in the past, but he's 6'1", 223, track speed, like fast dude, really, really good combine numbers and metrics. This last year, 905 rushing yards on 156 attempts. So that's 5.8 yards per attempt. Really solid numbers there. Showed to be a decent receiver. Doesn't have, you know, pretty limited in his route tree, but good hands. So he's the closest to me as being an all-around back next to the guy that we first talked about in Jonathan Brooks. But he's going to be dropped a little bit because of that more long-term major injury history. It was ACL, MCL, basically every ligament in the knee got fucked up at one point. So I like Trey Benson a lot. And then other than that, I've got like, okay. Now I look further down. There's a couple other guys I can bring up here, okay, that are going to be interesting. Well, but I'll let you bring up some players.
I'll hop in here right, real quick. So I got something on Blake Corum. I mean, everybody's got to have something on Blake Corum. He's a fucking muscle hamster, dude. Like, that is exactly what he is. He's a fucking muscle hamster. He's got great straight lines. Say that again.
Shades of MJD.
Yeah, 100%. Like, great straight line speed. I don't love his shiftiness at all. Works really good as a fucking, as a platoon back. Could be really, really good as a platoon back. But if he wants more opportunities, I'd like to see him pass block better. Like, if you want to be on the field more, you need to learn how to pass block a little better. That will get you on the field, be able to let you run a little bit more. And then injuries are also a little bit of a concern for Blake Corum. Like, he's been beaten up a couple times as well. So that kind of shuffles him down a little bit for me. But I do think he has really good vision. He's a good instinctive runner. I mean, you can turn on the tape. He is not the greatest athlete, but he always finds a way to make yards. Like, that's what he does. He gets the ball, he gets his yards. Sometimes he'll rip one off. I don't know if he's got that juice in the NFL, but against other college kids, he was doing just fine. But he's got to be in a platoon, in my opinion. But if you like Blake Corum, you can get a guy probably in the seventh round, maybe even undrafted, that I think is very fucking similar to Blake Corum. Imani Bailey out of TCU is a guy that I actually really fucking like. I got to hear that he's also a muscle hamster, but is the cheaper version of Blake Corum. Because you're not going to have, you might not even have to draft this kid. He might fall down that far. His vision and his burst might be the best of any running back in this group that I have seen. He's also a platoon player, so let's not get it twisted. A guy who falls that far is not going to come in and immediately be a guy that just you can hand the fucking backfield to. That's not going to happen. But like, he's super, super good. He needs to be a little bit better as a blocker, but he's excellent in the screen game. So if your team runs a lot of screens, like, this kid is great in that and good out of the backfield catching the ball. Good playmaker, just doesn't have the long speed that you would want to see him rip off big runs. But I think Imani Bailey is a guy that you can get really good value in late in the draft, especially if you like a guy like a Blake Corum and you can't get him early.
Sure. Yeah, and that's Bailey. I got him as a UDFA probably just because of the kind of the size. I mean, he's 5'7". Yeah. He's 202 pounds, but 5'7". He's a little bit too impatient, or like, he's too patient in the backfield sometimes, waiting on things to go, to, you know, for blocks to set up and then kind of, you know, hit up the middle. But he also then will bounce outside when I don't think it's really necessary. I'm sitting there waiting too long, trying to make a big play, and ends up kind of getting negative yards or you know, not getting any yardage. But he's a guy that could develop, and he's one of those guys. Again, you could talk about a handful of these guys
being fucking UDFA. 20 of these goddamn running backs being UDFAs. You can come in and maybe compete for a spot, be a number three running back, and work their way in.
Yeah,
that's how the entire running back class is. There's no value at the top, but there is value late in the draft if you like a guy or as a UDFA.
Yep. I'm curious, did you see or look at anything on Isaac Guerrero out of Louisville?
Out of Louisville? I did not look at Isaac Guerrero.
So he is a guy that I've kind of been sitting on for a while that I like as probably a fifth rounder. And I think that he's actually solidified his stock as a fifth rounder, if not a fourth rounder at this point.
Holy fuck. Are these numbers right that I'm seeing him from his combine? 4.33, 50, 41 inch vertical?
He had a fantastic combine, and that's why people were actually looking at him now.
Explosive fucking athlete. Yeah, I got to go take a look at this kid.
6'2", 221, kind of all around back. Reminds me of Rashad White a little bit out of Tampa. Oh. Like, he's a suddenness type of runner off the line of scrimmage. Good acceleration. I wouldn't necessarily, like, I didn't think that his long speed was that good, but then he runs that fucking 40.
4.33, I mean.
Yeah, he's a one cut back, like he is the single move and up.
That's the dude I love. That's the guy I want because I love the zone blocking scheme. Press the hole, make your cut, and get upfield. Like dudes have eaten like that for an eternity in the NFL. Adrian Peterson literally showed the entire NFL that this is how you can run these plays. Stretch plays, press the hole, cut back, you're gone. Nick Chubb does the same fucking thing. Those guys are really special, especially if you have the juice to get and go.
Mm-hmm. Now I'll say this with him. He's not elusive. Like, I don't view him as an elusive guy. I feel like his frame, like, he doesn't get small through the hole. So, you know, which is part of that elusivity issue and stuff like that. A little bit of an upright runner. I don't want to use a David Johnson comp either because David Johnson was different as a receiving back, and I don't know that Guerrero has that because we didn't get to see as much of it. But the way that he kind of runs upright and the one-cut capability reminds me of the David Johnson running style a little bit. He's not super physically imposing or anything despite that size. But, like, again, he is a really good one cut back. And then I again thought fifth round, this guy is going to mix into a backfield really well. And then you see those combine numbers. And I think a lot of eyes were turning, being like, wait, who the fuck is this? We need to go back and look at the tape. So yeah, Isaac Guerrero, a guy that I still feel like is probably ends up being a fifth rounder, but he could sneak into the fourth and could be a very solid running back going forward.
All right. I'm going to check this kid out. I mean, you said his name, I went to go look him up, and the numbers are fucking outrageous.
Yeah. Like I said, this is a guy that I had randomly heard about on a podcast, being like, people aren't talking about this guy, like a month before the combine or so. And I started looking at stuff. I was like, oh, he's pretty fucking solid. And then all of a sudden I was like, okay, these combine numbers, and now he's not a secret anymore.
Yeah. When you run like that, when you jump like that, it's impossible to keep it a secret.
Yeah. Yep. And then two other names here. I would be remiss if I don't bring up Frank Gore Jr.
Yeah. I'm rooting for him.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he does great.
That, when you were saying another muscle hamster, I was like, he's going to say Frank Gore Jr.
I'm not saying Frank Gore Jr. No. Yep. Listen, nothing against Frank Gore Jr. I think that his name has gotten him a lot farther than maybe his play has.
Sure. Absolutely. But then the other name, and this one is a guy that is probably going to be like a sixth round pick or something like that. And I honestly don't know if he'll end up making a squad by the end of it all, but he's a fun guy for me. He had a really good Senior Bowl out of New Hampshire, Dylan Laub. Have you heard of him?
I have not, but then again, you said New Hampshire. So yes.
He's a New Hampshire Wildcat.
So they don't even have a fucking picture of this kid.
He's a whitey.
He's white? Wait, yeah. There's another white who's trying to be a running back?
Yeah.
The audacity is outrageous.
The interesting thing with him is that, okay, remember, we're playing at much lower competition here. 2022, 245 rushing attempts, 1,200 yards, a 4.9 average, real solid, right? He also that year had 49 receptions on 60 targets for 474 yards. In the offseason, the team told him, you're not practicing as a running back anymore. You're practicing as a wide receiver. Mind you, he is 5'10", 208, so he's a small kind of slot type of receiver size. Mm-hmm. He went out, had 88 targets this year, 68 receptions, 708 receiving yards, and another 745 rushing yards with 9 rushing touchdowns. And they still played him as a running back. They just would flex him out to play slot and things like that. He was one of the, he was their starting, like, main featured back, but they would use him everywhere on the field. So he, again, multi-tool type of guy. Some teams are probably going to view him as a receiver more than a running back. But if you're looking for a guy that can be that kind of multiple option, think of Jerick McKinnon. He's got the ability to be a receiver, a runner. I mean, McKinnon was a quarterback in college.
Yeah.
So, like, hey,
ballers can ball, dude. It doesn't matter where you fucking play. If you, if you're a good enough athlete, somebody will find a spot for you.
Yeah. And like I said, he had a really good Senior Bowl. But then he comes to the combine and did not have the greatest numbers there. He had a 4.5 4.40, which, if you're talking about, I mean, it's not terrible.
It's not bad. But, I mean, it's not great, but.
But yeah, like, nothing kind of blew him up there. It was nothing special.
Hey, he's got a good three cone, baby. 6.84 three cone.
87% yeah. For the three cone. I just like that he, like, the team identified, like, this guy is a really good receiver and we're going to waste him if we just use him as a running back. And so they basically told him in the offseason, without saying, like, oh, you're not going to be a running back anymore, they're like, you're practicing with the wide receivers now. And you're doing wide receiver training. And then he got into the year at running back and they're like, you're already a good running back. You're still a running back, but you're going to get used as a receiver a lot more. So plan to be a bigger part of the offense. And really fit into that role well. So with 1 year of experience training to be a receiver, he was able to put up, you know, 700 something yards, which some of these receiver prospects that we'll get here to in the coming weeks, you know, they'll put up that many in a year, but they're also competing with other receivers and stuff out there in general. And again, small school production. So we'll see how that translates to the NFL. But he's a guy that I like as late round, maybe a UDFA. I still think that he ends up getting drafted as a late round guy, but he's kind of got some fun potential to be a gadget.
All right. All right. I'm going to check this kid out too. Laub. I'm just going to Google white running back and
Dylan Laub, Laube.
Hopefully Christian McCaffrey doesn't pop up.
Yeah.
It's almost certainly what's going to happen.
Yeah. Which, you know, we'll talk about Luke McCaffrey, maybe, you know, wide receiver episode. Ran a faster 40 than his brother. Great pedigree.
Yeah. Gosh, if we're going to talk about Luke McCaffrey. So back before you joined the show, back when this was no video, just audio podcast, I had one of my old high school coaches come on the show. I was a former NFL player, played in Nebraska, and a huge Nebraska fan. And he had some choice things to say about the way the whole McCaffrey situation worked out and the constant changing of schools. I might have to hit up Coach again and see if we can't get some information.
Thoughts. Yeah.
So, oh, man.
That'll definitely be for the wide receiver-centric episode.
Yes, yes, it will be, in which we have not decided what we're doing next week, but I got no other running back prospects that I need to talk about.
Yeah, I think if we were to talk more running back prospects, it's going to be a lot of the same. This guy's a 5th, 6th, 7th round pick. We like some things, we don't like other things. They're part of a platoon, and you never know. Like, it, unfortunately, we can talk about a bunch of these guys and be like, they might be something, and then they're going to be the next, you know, top end back or something like that that no one ever saw coming. You know, so.
Well, and that's the great thing about the draft in this time. Like, we have our recuse speculation and everybody's a fucking draft expert. Dude, honestly, I would love to say that I know a ton of shit. Nobody fucking knows. The NFL, the guys that run these teams don't fucking know what's going to happen with these guys. You can give your best guess. You're going to be right every once in a while. And when you're right, enjoy that shit. But more times than not, you're probably going to be fucking wrong. So
look, good drafts by most metrics if you say you start off with seven picks, if you're able to get four guys that are role players, you got a good draft.
Yeah. If you get two starters, like you're like, yeah, that's good. That was great. But all right, man, I got nothing else on the prospects. You got no other prospects you want to go over?
No, sir.
All right. Well, let's transition. We're going to wrap the show up here in a little bit, but we got to talk about UFC 299 tomorrow. So I'm fucking pumped. I am for sure watching UFC 299 tomorrow, and I will, like I always do, buy this UFC because I always pay the money to Dana White in that group because they deserve it. And but this one, I got to make sure that the stream is good because my boy Sean O'Malley is fucking fighting, and he is my favorite fighter. Probably my favorite fighter that I've ever watched in the UFC. Like, well surpasses Conor McGregor. And George St. Pierre from old. But it's a damn good card, man. Are you any plans to watch UFC? I know you're going to have the boys.
You know, I have no idea if the boys have any interest in it. And to be completely honest, I'm going to be focused on them this next week and doing right. whatever they want to do. But I will bring it up as an option for us, and maybe it's something that they'll be interested in, because I'm pretty sure that in their current living situation out there, they probably don't watch this because they don't get paid attention to at all. So
sorry. I'm not laughing at that situation. I am
laughing at the jab.
Happy that you took the shot.
Yeah. Yeah. I have plenty of bullets in the chamber for that one, but it looks to be a pretty damn good card. So it definitely would be interesting. I mean, you have a lot of big name fighters out here. You know, even on the prelims, you have Curtis Blaydes going out there again, like well-known Macy Barber. But on the main card, Peter Yan's fighting. You have Dustin Poirier fighting, Kevin Holland fighting, Gilbert Burns fighting. You got all these big names just throughout the entire card. There are a lot of name recognition.
I mean, Peter Yan versus fucking Song Yadong right off the bat. Korean Zombie.
Song Yadong.
Dude, that's a fucking great fight to start a pay-per-view event. Peter Yan and Song Yadong? I think, which is the greatest name. Korean Zombie, super cool nickname. Should have just stuck with Song Yadong.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's way better. Gilbert Burns, I'm excited to see him fight again. Kevin Holland, like Poirier. But O'Malley, who is... If you ask Sean O'Malley, he is fucking 17-0 or whatever the hell his record is. That one loss does not count because he got hurt and some things happened, and that he doesn't count that loss. Well, he's going against Marlon Vera again, who is the one guy that gave him that loss. Can he get the retribution? Can Sean O'Malley prove that he's the dude at this weight class? I think he can. I think he will. I'm pumped. I love Sean O'Malley. Don't break your fucking leg again, dude.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to check the kicks. Just piece him up. That's what I want to see. But I'm super, super pumped. I hate the fact that I live on the East Coast now, though, because the main card does not start until 10. So I'm probably going to be drinking energy drinks while I am having, you know, alcoholic beverages or...
Herbal remedies.
Herbal remedies. Yeah, it's almost certainly going to be herbal remedies, but
sure.
But yeah, man, I'm pumped. And then UFC 300 also supposed to be a very good card. This is the one that I'm much more excited about because Sean O'Malley's on it, though. But if you got nothing else on UFC or anything, any other storylines you want to hit, man, we can get the hell out of here because I know you got some things you need to do. Prepare for the boys.
Yeah, no, nothing else from me, brother. Like I said, we are just a couple days away from the NFL, like, really fucking kicking off. I feel like we say this every week, but the offseason is just as... Look, all the other sports leagues need to take a look at how the NFL does it, because they are really, truly making a 365-day season, essentially. We have March Madness coming up, and spring baseball is going, and MLB is actually about to start. And
Hey, Rob Manfred! Fucking pay attention to what the NFL is doing, because I'm tired of not seeing important baseball things happen, period, ever, especially in spring training when storylines are happening. God damn it. I fucking hate Robert.
Like I said, spring training is going, March Madness, you've got professional basketball vying for the playoffs right now. You've got professional hockey, you know, vying for the playoffs right now. You've got a lot of good sports going on, and everyone's kind of focused on the fucking NFL.
The NFL dominates, dude.
Yeah.
It's a football country.
And it's going to get super wild here in a couple days when the tampering can truly start.
Yes. All right. Well, my man, let's get the fuck out of here.
All righty.
Guys, this was Lineman Lounge. I'm Mike. That's Eva. We are back every week. We typically try to put the information out on socials. We like to go on the weekends for the most part. But if we change it up and go on a Friday or any other night of the week, we put that out for you guys. And you can get all that information if you go to any of our socials. You can go to X or Twitter at Lineman Lounge, our Facebook page, TikTok, Instagram, all of that. And you're also getting new shorts, I want to say now, on a daily basis. We've kind of started to catch a rhythm on all the short form content as well. So if, you know, an hour and 20 minutes is too long to listen to these dummy thick idiots who are sexy as fuck, just watch this for a minute. That'll work too. But with that, we're going to get the fuck out of here. Evo, one last word for the people.
I don't have one word. It's a little saying. It's tamper me, daddy.
Ooh, I like that. All right, we're getting the fuck out of here. Shirt. Tamper me, daddy. I like it. But we're out of here. I'm Mike. That's Evo. See you next week.
Now tuned in to the Lineman Lounge, the world's thickest sports podcast, with your hosts, Mike and Evo.